Finding the right cleat can be transformative. Believe me, I've worn plenty during my career. So getting the right balance is crucial. The cleat needs to feel good on your foot, but also feel good connecting with the ball. The New Balance Furon 7 Plus is built with both of those points in mind, offering overall comfort and precise striking in the game's fastest moments. Because, as I learned the hard way, because I didn't possess much of it, speed matters in soccer. That's why the Furon 7 Plus is built for accuracy and precision at rapid pace, and is engineered specifically for use on firm ground. Why is this the ideal cleat, I hear you ask? Well, not to get too scientific, but the Furon 7 Plus offers a lightweight yet supportive hypo-knit with mesh lining upper construction and is paired with offset lacing for a truer strike of the ball, which is a long way of me saying that your game will immediately get better when these are on your feet. Learn more and purchase the Furon at newbalance.com.
Hey, it's Lisa Carlin from Attacking Third to tell you about the all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe. It's equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend. The Hyundai Santa Fe features available all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, plus available dual wireless charging pads, ensuring that you can take on any adventure. It's ski season, and with the all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe, I can easily load the car with all my gear, plus my friends in the third row, and make it right to the base of the slopes with all-wheel drive. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Attacking Third, a CBS Sports soccer podcast. I'm Sandra Herrera, lead NWSL writer for CBS Sports, joined today, as always, by my colleague and co-host Lisa Roman, broadcaster and analyst for CBS Sports. On today's episode, we have a bit of a news and notes wrap-up for everyone. There's a lot of things that we actually got to get through. We were curious on our way back from L.A. what exactly we were going to chat a little bit about in our midweek episode, but there's some things to go through, some announcements that were made stateside and globally that we'll take a deeper dive into. But before we get into all that, a quick reminder to watch all of our Attacking Third episodes, previews, recaps, interviews on YouTube. Please subscribe to our page to get notified whenever we go live at youtube.com/attackingthird. Home sweet home, Lisa. How you doing?
It's so good to be home. I mean, I've been home in like 2 weeks, it feels like. I'm happy to be here. Happy to be with you. Literally seconds before we went live, I was like, wow, it's great to be back in my little studio. And you were like, me too. Like, the office is nice to be here. And it's, of course, great to be back with you. We got to hang out this weekend in LA at Angel City Fan Fest, do a live show there and everything. But this is a little bit more our pace back to normal, back to the routine, back to giving the people what they need to know about the world of women's football. And I'm happy to be doing it here with you on this Wednesday morning. Happy Wednesday, all. Happy hump day.
Yeah. Happy midweek to everybody. Yeah. I'm with you. I was like, oh, my little safe space here, my home office, ready to chat about all things soccer with you. And you know what? I just feel like the way news sort of drops, like sometimes it drops in between like our game previews or our game recaps, and sometimes there's not a ton of time to dive into them. But doing this midweek, we get to maybe touch on a couple of things that you weren't actually able to react to, but it's given us some time to take a look at the news cycle, because there's been some interesting things that have dropped around the globe. Like I said, let's start with maybe an injury update. Unfortunately, in our preview ahead of last week's games, of course, sometimes we do our previews and it's before availability reports, but Nadia Nadim had confirmed just before Racing Louisville's win over Angel City FC that she has indeed torn her ACL. She had just torn her right ACL in September of 2021 and went through a comeback to push through to the Euros with Denmark. And now she confirmed that the injury that she exited the match against the Portland Thorns was another ACL. So best wishes to her. Not something that you want to see if you're a racing fan, maybe at this time in the season as well, right? It's towards the
end. Fan. I'm going to speak for any fan out there. This is devastating. But
that's such a tough road to sort of like have to go through all that, you know, once already just last year. And then now you've got a similar journey already paved for you, you know, the rest of the way. And it maybe puts a question mark around things for the World Cup.
Yes, I think that's really important to talk about and touch on. I mean, Nadim tore her right ACL early September of 2021. And at that point, completely devastating for her, for Racing Louisville, for Denmark, her national team. She was just on the cusp of 100 caps for that team. And she made a verbal statement saying that I want to be back. I want to play in the Euros. I want to play in the World Cup. I'm going to work her butt off to recover and to come back stronger and better than ever. And she did that. When she first stepped onto the pitch this year, I was like, wow, that's the quickest ACL recovery I've ever seen. And the fact that a week or so, at 1 year and a week or so after she initially tears that right ACL, it's now her left ACL, which is a truly, truly devastating. And one of like the worst parts about this is we see this a lot of times in athletes. When they tear one ACL, they go to recover so much. And it's not that they neglect their other leg, but they're focused so much on the leg that they just had surgery on and strengthening and making sure it's stable and getting ready to go, that the other leg, the one that didn't receive surgery, ends up not being neglected by any means, but putting so much work on that left leg. And then something like this happens, and it's just truly unfortunate to happen in a match like this before the World Cup, as you mentioned. 34 years old. She's wants to be back out there, though. Yeah. That's what she said. She was like, I'm a fighter. I'm devastated, but I faced obstacles and rough times since I was a child. So you might say I'm an expert in overcoming them. I was born a fighter, and I know that nothing can break me down. So Nadim's spirit is unmatched. It's truly incredible.
Yeah. And I know it's there's those moments when you're recognizing what type of injury it is, right? And I mean, like, this is someone who's like, not even Nadim's a freaking doctor, like she's straight up Dr. Nadim. So like,
surgeon.
like seeing her reaction, this is obviously someone, A, any professional athlete kind of knows their body better than anybody, right? And then you have B, this added component where it's just like she's a medical professional and you're just like, oh, like she definitely knows.
She really knows
what's going on with her body. And you were just hoping that it wasn't the worst, but that she went ahead and confirmed her injury. And you don't ever, you know, want to like highlight things like age, stuff like that. But, you know, it's just one of those things where it's like, health and in science, it's just like your body kind of heals differently if you're an athlete in your 30s versus an athlete in your, you know, young teens, right? So I'm hopeful that she's able to make a speedy recovery. Yeah. And like outside of like NWSL, like knowing this international window's coming up, like obviously she's not going to be part of that roster for Denmark going up against Australia and their friendlies, right? You wonder, like, with the short kind of timeline, it's like about 8 to 9 mm-hmm. months or so for the next World Cup when rosters will probably be named.
That's close.
It's really, really, really close, right? So you just wonder like what it also means for a team and program like Denmark, right? I believe Brunel Harder is also like kind of kind of nursing a hamstring injury at this moment. I do believe she got named to the roster in October, so perhaps that's good news. But you just never know. It's just this next timeline, like this next phase of build up to the World Cup is so short.
I think it's shorter
than people anticipate.
And as you mentioned, I mean, yeah, age, I guess, plays a factor in this in terms of like people's bodies. But the fact that Nadim just went through this, she knows every step of the way what to do, which frankly could be very good or very bad mentally on an athlete in that type of recovery, because she's going to be comparing her right ACL recovery to this left one the entire time. And if she's not at the same progression 3 months as she was with a year ago, I hope that mentally she can almost reset herself, get on track, be incredibly focused on this recovery and strengthening her whole body, and not compare one recovery to the next, because it's completely different. It's not
the same. It's not the same. Anyone will tell you that one injury to the next is entirely different. Same way you wouldn't compare an injury that I suffer to one that you suffer. They're very different. So, I mean, prayers up to her for sure. Thoughts with her. I know the Racing Louisville team came out against Angel City and they fought hard. Big probably win. For Nadine. I mean, she's such a leader on that team and they got a big win last weekend for her, but prayers to her. I guess we'll see what happens in seven, yeah. 8 months. We'll hear from her. She's very vocal on social media. Give her a follow. People that already follow her know how vocal she is and how much she communicates with her fans and people that are interested in her life. So we'll hear from her. Speedy recovery yeah. to Nadia Nadine for sure.
Yeah, best of luck on her next recovery injury. And I'm sure it's something that we'll be keeping an eye on as that World Cup does get closer. Let's keep things globally, though. We're talking about the Denmark national team a little bit and what injuries could affect them. But there's some news coming out of Spain that we really wanted to touch on that we unfortunately were unable to touch on for a number of reasons. News dropping almost about a week ago or so. But there was obviously NWSL playoff push happening, Women's Super League kicking off. Lisa was having adventures in Europe and having some much needed R&R. But now there's an opportunity for you and I both to sort of touch on this about Spain's women's national team. There's some news that was broken by the federation. I think that we need to start there, right? So
yeah,
The Real Federation of Spanish Football came out with a statement that kind of, you know, caught headlines. And it was an official statement in which within this statement, the Federation put on public notice that they received 15 emails from players with the same wording, alluding to the current state of the national team and how it affects, you know, their emotional state. And it was very curious within this release, the Federation put like quotations around those words, like, you know, emotional state and how it affects them. And ultimately, the Federation said that they would not allow players to question the national team coach and the coaching staff and referred to the emails ultimately as a resignation from the national team. And at moments throughout this statement, alluding to the fact that that means there's potential for players in the youth levels and lower yeah. levels, you know, opportunities for them perhaps, and that this was, you know, egregious, that this was something that these emails and this these resignations were something that are unheard of, you know, in men's and women's programs. And the only way players would be allowed to return in the future is if they basically admitted that they've made a mistake in their resignations and asked for forgiveness.
Yeah.
Quite frankly, just like first reactions to this, Lisa,
also before we jump into first reactions, another statement that I want to like point out there is they said that refusing to honor a call up for the national yeah. team was classified as, quote, a very serious infraction and can carry sanctions of 2 and 5 years yeah. of disqualification.
There was a lot of, I think like as we're just getting into like first reactions now, it's just, just like the wording in this, like there were a lot of levels within this where I just couldn't help but feel like a lot of condensating language, and really unfortunate, type of statement to come out, because again, this was direct from the Federation. And this, you know, this scenario in which 15 players sent a collective statement via email directly to their Federation.
No.
And then only for the Federation to sort of kind of utilize that and try to maybe, you know, get ahead of it, so to speak, and paint players in a negative light. The fact that the players tried to go directly to their Federation first, you know, without
they tried kind of making, to keep it private. They tried to work directly with the source of the Federation and say, we're not too happy with what's happening right now. We need to take some time away. You mentioned first reactions, and I was, when I was reading this, I was like, that was honestly my first reaction. I was like, wait, what did the players say? I like thought I missed something. Because again, I was traveling. I was in and out of service and in and out of Wi-Fi on top of the mountains. This episode is
both for our listeners and for Lisa.
Because I saw this news and I was like, wait, what did I miss? What did the players say? What did they do? Yeah. What happened? Was there an outward protest? Was there a letter that came out? And there wasn't. So that was honestly my first reaction was these players went directly. They sent individual emails. Not as a group, individual 15 emails to the Federation with similar wording. So obviously some collaboration on the back end, but saying that individually they were not going to participate. And then the Federation took it public and could almost put their spin on it, or in a sense, put their wording on what they wanted to happen out there. With my understanding, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, Sandra, but the Federation didn't respond to those players and individually, they responded in a public statement instead of responding to those players individually and having those conversations, which is what the players initially wanted. And I think another thing about the statement that the Spanish Federation put out there is that this, they said something along the lines of, this has never happened before. It has happened before. It has happened before. Lest we all forget, Kristen Press, after playing with Manchester United, she announced that she was going to take some time away from soccer for her own mental and spiritual health. And the NWSL and Racing Louisville, who had her rights, like complied to that and said, yes, take care of yourself. U.S. Soccer said, yes, take care of yourself. And she was back on the national team when she was ready to play. So it has happened before. Has happened before. So I think that was also something a little bit interesting to read and hear what was said, but there came more responses after this initial statement from the Federation.
Yeah, I am. We saw like when this statement came out, obviously it was trending. It was probably one of the bigger soccer stories in the news cycle. And the reporting around it eventually, the names of the players who, you know, were amongst the 15 who issued, you know, emails to the Federation started to drop. And these weren't, you know, names that people are unfamiliar with. These are big players and with big clubs, many of them representing Barcelona specifically, but, you know, like players like Atiana Bonmati, we saw Mapi Leon, you know, a couple of Barca players there, Sandra Paños, Mariona Cadently. Like it was interesting to sort of see the players and the clubs in which they were tied to. Among these 15, people made note that there were no players from Real Madrid specifically, but that's not to assume that many of the players attached to the program don't feel similarly. But you know, Lucia Garcia, Ana Bataille, you know, these are players who are playing in the Women's Super League right now, both attached to Man City or Man United. So there were players through this list that people were taking note of.
These are not players that are on the bubble of the national
team. They are like fully
they are starters
in the program.
They have been with the national team in the Federation for years, since youth, some of them, and they're starters, they're big influential players, as well as some players that are maybe on the bubble and have only a few caps under their name. So this spans from players of every single talent caliber on this team and recognition, honestly.
Yeah. And, you know, I think, you know, the news cycles, you know, nowadays are very quickly or run very, very quickly. And, you know, people wanted to make note, not just of the players who were attached to these 15 emails, but also wanted to make note of the players who were not attached, which is just going to be like an unfortunate part of the scenario. And people were making note that somebody like Alexia Putellas was not on there, or somebody like Jenny Hermoso was not on there. And again, sometimes it's better to wait than to be first. And we saw those players make statements. So, you know, Alexia Putellas is the reigning Ballon d'Or winner. She's FIFA's mm-hmm. best player in the world, right? She's number one player in the world right now. You recognize the name, the face, but unfortunately she's currently recovering from an AC injury of her own. So, you know, perhaps, you know, reasoning, you know, not being part of the 15 right now is that ultimately, like, she's not a player that's being called into camps at the moment, but she is somebody since the news of these 15 emails has come out, she has since verbally voiced her concerns to the program. She came out with a statement reiterating as such, like, hey, like, I've voiced these concerns earlier in the month directly to the president of the Royal Spanish Football Federation. So coming out with her own statement on her own social media platforms, but also Jenny Hermoso also making a statement as well. And this is a player, we're talking about players who have been fully vested in the Spanish women's program. This is one of those players. She's been around for quite some time. Has had a number of titles won with Barcelona. And now she's actually pretty removed in the sense where she's no longer actually playing in Spain. She's currently playing in Liga MX Femenil in Mexico with Pachuca. And she also made a statement and just saying that she wanted to publicly express support for her colleagues who communicated their position. Not only do I understand your reasons, but I've also experienced many of the feelings and concerns you've communicated. It is important to understand that the situation we're experiencing does not come overnight, and it is evident that it is a consequence of a cluster of events, behaviors, decisions, failed attempts, and exhaustion from trying to make the players' voices heard. So, I think it's interesting and important to note that while there was a kind of a collective statement that was obviously issued among the primary 15, that there's now these additional statements from two other players who are quite, you know, prolific, you know, to the Spanish national team program, that kind of has, you know, a different perspective on it, a more individualistic kind of voice or perspective on it. So, I think it's important to note that it's like Hermoso said, that this is something that doesn't just sort of come out of nowhere.
Right.
Obviously, it's accumulation of certain events.
And I think it's interesting the timing of all of this, because the initial statement released by the Federation came last Thursday, and Jenny Hermoso's statement didn't come until yesterday, Tuesday, September 27th. So 5 days later, plenty of time for this player to read what was happening, speak with some of her friends and teammates, and get a grasp of everything that's happening. I'm sure she already had, but this statement from Hermosa is thought out. It's not a quick gut reaction response to what the Federation put out. And it also wasn't planned, because these emails that were sent individually to the Federation from the players were not It wasn't planned. They didn't go to these other players, Hermosa, Putellas, saying, hey, we're going to send these and here's your get ready for your response. Put it out on Twitter. We're going to make a big public statement. They tried to do this very individualized, personally talking with their federation, their bosses, right? Like, this is a job. These are professional athletes, going to speak to them one-on-one. And the fact that it kind of, I'm going to say blew up like this, but became public. Didn't blow up, became public the way it did is,
well, it's
not something the players initially wanted, because they would have just put their statement out there publicly.
Well, yeah. I mean, because now it's outside of Spain. It's outside of a Spanish media market.
Yeah.
It's become a global story. Right. And because of that, there's other notable players making reactions to this. I think this is where you call that a transition a little bit. We're going to talk about how other players outside of Spain have reacted to this, specifically members of the United States women's national team. We've had public statements of support from Alex Morgan, from Megan Rapinoe, from Becky Sauerbrunn. Alex Morgan saying that this is so hard to watch, knowing the Federation is throwing their players under the bus for asking for better protection, treatment, and professionalism. Players, the best players in Spain, deserve so much better. Megan Rapinoe taking it a step further, saying, hey, you got a 16th player standing with you in the United States. This many players together is so powerful, and we should all listen. And Becky Sauerbrunn saying, I think the Spanish players said it best in their statement. Why would a group of players on one of the most talented teams in the world risk their careers and reputations on unfounded, capricious complaints 8 months before the FIFA Women's World Cup? I don't know the private details, but if 15 of the best players in the world wanted to share feedback, I'd respect them enough as people and players to take their concerns seriously. These are, again, public displays mm-hmm. of support from, again, we're talking about prolific players for Spain. These are three of the biggest players for the United States yeah. women's national team. These are three players similar to Hermoso who have been part of the United States women's national team program for many, many, many years. So this kind of maybe sheds a little bit of a spotlight on what it could mean globally. We were talking about how there's an international window coming up. There are games on the schedule for these two teams specifically. Yeah. The United States are getting ready to head off to Europe and participate in what is supposed to be, as of right now, a two-game series in Europe. The first taking place against England on October 7th, and another one on the 11th that is supposed to take place against Spain. Now, I do wonder if something like this is potentially up in the air. You know, what could it possibly mean for the game? Because as our time of recording this and on September 28th, you know, a roster has already dropped for England. I'm sure there's one coming for the United States. What is it going to mean for that next game, you know, against Spain? What were some of your reactions when you saw some of these displays of support?
I wasn't surprised at all to hear players like Alex Morgan, Megan Rapinoe, Becky Sauerbrunn, U.S. soccer players speaking out about this, and not just speaking out, but giving their support to the Spanish players and saying that Megan Rapinoe, you got a 16 standing with you. Like that didn't surprise me at all. I mean, they know these people; they've been playing against them, some of them with them, for years. Years. They know them. They watch them. It's soccer. I mean, any sport really is such an activity that you admire the people that are doing incredible things and standing up for, whether it's incredible things on the pitch, but standing up to their employers or making a name for themselves or doing those things you support, you salute, you stand up and cheer for them as well. So this response, not at all shocking, but I think it is interesting that this comes just 2 weeks before the United States is supposed to be in Spain playing against the Spanish national team. And kind of what does that mean? I think it's a bigger issue of, is Spain going to have enough players? How's their competition roster going to be for the U.S.? Because it's a bigger conversation than that, because there are plenty of Spanish footballers that will join this national team, whether they're youth players, mm-hmm. as that initial statement said. But that's not the issue. I think the Spanish Federation needs to come to a solution with their players. They need to have that conversation. I mean, I'm preaching to the choir here. I know you know this as well, but this is, it's a bigger issue than that. And I think these statements from these three players, Megan Rapinoe, Alex Morgan, Becky Sauerbrunn, is in line with that. It's not like, hey guys, can you join the team so we can have a great competition on October 11th? It's no, we're going to stand with you. You need to do what's right. If you don't feel safe and healthy and you need a mental break, yes, take it. It's fine. We'll figure out the friendly later, in so many words, right? So, but I think fans have to think of October 11th when the United States, after they play England, they're headed to Spain, and kind of what happens, how that unravels. And I think more information will come, whether it's from the Spanish Soccer Federation or the U.S., Federation, in terms of kind of how they're going to approach this, in addition to rosters, right? We should be getting those any day now. So, I think more information to come, but we wanted to catch everyone up on where we are up until this point, Wednesday, 2 weeks before the match.
I feel like, we both felt like it was important to talk about, not obviously because of the big glaring reason it's a piece of news that we wanted to talk about, but also be like, it's probably something that's going to continue to evolve, something that we're going to have to keep an eye on in regards to this international window and how things are impacted there. But just, just devastating to see this come out. It just sort of feels like, you know, two steps forward, one step back when you think about like things globally, collectively. It's like you want to celebrate things like, you know, the historic CBA that this U.S. women's national team like just signed. And then you're looking at a program like Spain that is going through what they're going. I hate to even feel like this is like a bit of deja vu, but I mean, this is just so unfortunate that this is one of these things where we see a bit of news like this drop and just say, oh, this actually is not unfamiliar. This is something that has happened before. This is something that women's senior women's national team programs across the world have had to deal with. Unfortunately, we obviously have kept a close eye on it with the United States and U.S. soccer and how they have tried to, you know, go ahead and evolve. And we've seen it with Australia and then and the Matildas and their own federation. And we're watching it happen with, you know, Spain right now. So it's just one of these things. It's exhausting. It almost kind of feels like, but it's something that we're just gonna have to keep an eye on and hopefully still be diligent in terms of the coverage of it, because the players, if they're getting to this point, it almost sort of seems like a little bit of a, I don't want to say cry for help, but it's obviously a little bit something where they're trying to get resolved, whether it's before the World Cup or in general, and hopefully good things come out of it for the players moving forward. There was some other news that dropped on the NWSL side of things, something that we also wanted to touch on here in this episode. As we took a deep dive on Spain, we wanted to talk about a situation that had occurred with the San Diego Wave and Angel City FC during that very epic sellout crowd of 32,000. There unfortunately was a very terrible incident that occurred. The San Diego Wave were investigating an alleged racist incident from that match in which a visiting fan, an Angel City fan, had said that they were essentially harassed and targeted. The San Diego Wave FC organization went ahead and gave an update saying on Saturday, September 17th at Snapdragon Stadium, a Wave FC fan reportedly directed a racial slur and physical action towards two visiting Angel City FC fans. The club investigated the incident with the support of Snapdragon Stadium, the NWSL, and Angel City. Follow-up interviews were conducted with witnesses to the incident. Although witnesses did not corroborate the use of offensive racist language, they supported the report of threatening and physical behavior at the game. The fan was issued a warning by security during halftime. However, the behavior continued and escalated at the end of the match. The behavior of the Wave FC fan violated the club code of conduct, which prohibits, quote, behavior that is illegal, disruptive, threatening, or violent in nature, including verbal, physical, or virtual harassment of match officials, player, staff, or other patrons, end quote. As a result, the club has issued a lifetime ban of Wave FC matches and community events to the individual involved. And they concluded their statement by saying, if you see any incidents occurring at Snapdragon Stadium, to say something, contact a guest service representative or text your concern to 619-393-5705. So unfortunate that something like that even had to happen. Horrible. Quite frankly, disappointing, horrible. Grateful that the organization issued this strong of a consequence. I'm not going to lie, Lisa. When I first saw this drop, I thought it was going to be something that was swept away and under the rug. This is not the first time, unfortunately, an alleged racist and harassing type of incident has occurred across NWSL stadiums. It quite frankly, at this point, doesn't matter what market you're in, whether it's a smaller market club or a larger market club, for whatever reason, there is poor behavior everywhere. And I was a little taken aback at how swiftly this investigation was concluded, and B, the end result and the consequence that was delivered.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that this happened is just horrible. Come on, people, do better. I know most of you do, but like, it's the fact that this is even happening is just outrageous to me. But I think that it was called upon it seems like they spoke to the individual at halftime, and then as it the game continued,
that was a little interesting
that they spoke to the individual at halftime. It was kind of like, hey, calm down, I guess. I don't know what they said, but the fact that then continued and it was like, okay, you're done. All wave games, all wave community events. We've seen before when individuals get banned from certain stadiums, but this from San Diego Wave saying you're banned from all of our games and all of our community events, meaning like you can't come around at all. I also want to shout out Sleepy Repeat here in our chat, because I think you make a great point, which is something like this needs to be recognized, that it takes one highlight away from the 3,999 other fans, because this was a huge game for San Diego Wave FC in Snapdragon Stadium, a crowd of 32,000 against Angel City. It was a sellout. It was an NWSL attendance record. It was something that San Diego maybe didn't think they could do initially, that NWSL didn't think they could do initially. I know that I had my hesitations at first when we saw San Diego playing in Torreo, a stadium that sits about 6,000, and they were selling that out weekly. But can you go to a 32,000 seat stadium that is Snapdragon and continue that? Yeah, they sure can. And I think that's definitely what needs to be celebrated, that it was a sellout crowd against Angel City in this new stadium. San Diego is, I mean, I've like blown away by the expansion sides in the NWSL this year, whether it's Angel City and everything they've been able to do, or San Diego and everything they've been able to do with this 32,000 sellout crowd, NWSL playoffs in their first year as an expansion side. There's just a lot to be celebrated here as well that I think it's good to touch on.
Yeah, and I hope that something like a resolution like this, you know, ultimately is something that supports, you know, Martin Macias. You know, Junior, he was a person that sort of took to Twitter and then talked about the experience that he and his partner had while at this game. You know, they were visiting fans, you know, like they were, it was a California clash. It was, you know, two new expansion teams, Cali clubs going head to head. And I would imagine in the future, there's going to be a lot of crossover, right, between the two fans. So I would hope that, you know, they obviously were reached out to with the resolution of this, and or at least I hope that that's the case. I hope they didn't find out about it just on Twitter, and hopefully and hopefully this doesn't sour, you know, future experiences for them, future experiences for people who were, you know, in that section or fans of other club or both clubs in general, in terms of the beginnings, right, of this rivalry. So glad that the investigation took place and then the resolution and consequence that was issued by San Diego. We will see if this is something that, you know, sort of, if you set the tone, right, maybe your fan base continues to sort of follow suit. So hopefully this is the first and last time. I don't know. We don't know. We won't know until we know, but I hope that it is. Believe it or not, we have a quick pick to make before we go, Lisa. Despite all the news and notes, there is a game that's happening today that you can catch on Paramount Plus. It is a Women's Super League match. It is going to be Chelsea FC versus West Ham. I think maybe people just sort of thinking of the two teams going head to head, maybe they're like, oh, that's not too big of a clash. But actually, two match days in to the season, Chelsea and West Ham are 5-6 in the standings, and they're going to be going head to head. Lisa, if you got to pick a winner in this one, who would you be going with?
And both Chelsea and West Ham 1-1, the 1-1, lost one. Okay, so if I have to go and I have to pick, honestly, I'm going to go West Ham.
Okay.
Because I like a little bit of an upset. Not that it's an upset, but I like a little bit of a challenge. And I think that Chelsea is coming off that loss that they just suffered to Man City. And with West Ham, they're coming off of a win, a big win that they played over Everton. And then they got that loss against United. But I'm just, I want them to win. I want them to come out and show this Chelsea side what they can do. It's being played at Kings Meadow. I'm going to go West Ham on this one. What about you?
Look, I love chaos. So there's a part of me that wants to choose a draw and just say, hey, neither of you do each other any favors. And you both just sort of squeak out of here with a draw. But, you know, for all the other reasons, the reasons you mentioned, I'm actually going with Chelsea. I think that they're a little hard pressed still from that upset and mm-hmm. How they want to turn their season around very quickly. They don't want to make it a habit, right, of dropping points to a team that might be in a certain place in the table versus they are. It could just be on brand for them as well. You know, just sort of still kind of maybe kicking off some of that offseason rust a little bit. And maybe they'll finally be kicking it into gear. So I'm going to be going with the Blues in this one as well. Everybody, you can actually catch that match today on Paramount Plus later on Wednesday. I believe it's 2 p.m. Eastern. So make sure you check it out when you get a chance. That's it for us here at Attacking Third. Thanks so much for listening to us. As always, download, follow, and listen to us anywhere you get your podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, everywhere. Subscribe to us on YouTube to know whenever we go live. It's the NWSL playoff push. We're gonna be taking a look at one final match day for NWSL as well. So make sure you're back with us for Friday's episode. For Sandra Herrera and Lisa Roman, this was Attacking Third.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.